session number 9857, reel 3.
Mr. Mapplebeck, reel 3. So you just said that you were told to get out.
We went to the telephones and we rang up all our members of the rowing club and the rugby club. And there were two ships going from Hamburg to Immingham and one going to Harwich. We advised these lads to leave, if they possibly could, on these three ships. They were passenger ships. I took about 20 of them to Harwich, and the others went, and I got them to send to me in our family hotel their addresses, and to give them advice as to what to do. The fear at that time was that the war would be over before we could get into it. So I went up from Harwich to London and started to telephone my older brother, who was with 4th Squadron at Netherhaven. He'd learnt to fly in 1912, and his story is here in writing. He won the first DSO of the Royal Flying Corps as a pilot, and he was a founder member of the Flying Boot Club as well. He was killed in August 15. But I couldn't get through to him. I went into the Admiralty, and I asked for a clerk from Intelligence. And I said, I've just arrived in the Peregrine from Hamburg, and I've got the chart of the minefield through which we came and so forth. I think it may be interesting. Just a minute, sir. And then I was ushered to Admiral Oliver, Director of Intelligence. I was trying to help, but I also wanted to get into the war. We were all afraid the war would be over before we got there. He said, well, you know, this is the Royal Navy. We've got all that fixed up. And I got a letter of thanks from the Board of Admiralty for that service. I walked across the road to the War Office and went, after 2 hours, got through to Major Sefton Branker. And he said, well, I'd met him, you see, at Netherhaven, at what they'd called the concentration camp. All 4 squadrons of the Royal Flying Corps had been concentrated at Netherhaven. And I'd met him there, he knew me. I said, I can't get hold of my brother on the phone. They won't tell me where he is. Well, of course not. It's a military secret. What do you want? So I said, I want to know what to do before the war's over. Oh, he said, there's going to be plenty of time, 3 years at least. So I said, well, he said, why don't you go to Hendon and learn to fly? I said, well, we know what makes that trouble. I haven't got £100. You had to put down £100 and you got £25 back if you got your ticket without an accident. I said, well, I think I'll have to enlist and we'll see what happens. I proposed, since I can ride very well, I proposed to ride, enlist in the cavalry. He said, whatever you do, don't enlist in anything that has anything to do with horses. I'm a gunner in the ranks. It's not any fun to be in the artillery. So I said, well, he said, let me know what you do, and I'll get you into the flying corps. So I went up to Piccadilly Circus, walked along Jermyn Street to Jules Hotel. Did you know that Jules Hotel existed? Did you know Jermyn Street? No.
No.
Well, it's just near Piccadilly Circus. And each bedroom there had a bath in it, in a cupboard like this. You pressed a knob, you pulled down, and there was your bath. Now, the place still exists as Jules Bar. Anyway, I was met by Madame Estrazil, who owned the hotel, and she said, I've got a telegram for you. Oh, really? My brother knew that if I got out, I was sure to go. If I got out and got to London, I was sure to go to the Jules Hotel. He sent a telegram quite openly from Eastchurch. he and three other aircraft, four of them, had been sent across from Netherhaven to Eastchurch, and from there they flew to France. He made the first reconnaissance flight of the First War, successfully. I've forgotten his name now. He just said, report, Adjutant 4th, the King's Regiment. It was, you see, in the old days, you had to go to the flying corps, you had to go through the army. And my brother had been a special reserve officer in the King's Regiment, 8th Liverpool Regiment. I took the 555 train, and I was actually at the depot before the war broke out. On the 15th, I was given commission, second lieutenant, and in the meantime, my brother was had been wounded in France, and he was a bit of a hero. He started pulling strings with Henderson to get me across to the flying corps. But the colonel, when the war office applied for me to be seconded, sent for me and said, you're disloyal to the regiment. What do you want to do? I said, I want to get to France before the war's over. So I went out to France with the Battle of Neuve Chapelle, and afterwards I was given a substantive captaincy, helped to finding a German dentist with a Mauser rifle who blew out all my teeth. I've had no teeth since 1915, Second Battle of Ypres, the gas show. And thank God, they gave me a wound pension of £40 a year. I said, patriotically, don't bother about it, cancel it. Then I thought afterwards, it might be useful one day. I applied and got it renewed. It's now £700 a year. Oh, dear. So then I went to Major Sefton Branco, who was really a family friend, and I said, I want to get to the flying corps as soon as possible. And he said, well, get a medical board, pass you fit for a course of instruction. I'll post you. He thought he got rid of me. I found a Canadian division down at Taplow with a hospital, and I got a Canadian medical board to fill out the necessary document, not fit for foreign service, not fit for home service, and then to write in, fit for a course of instruction in aviation. And the net result was that I started instruction. I went up to Sefton Branco and he said, I'll post you to Montrose. I said, you know, there's still pus and bone coming away from my wound. It'll be rather awkward if I have to go into hospital again and my surgeon isn't in Montrose. Can't it be somewhere down? All right, we'll send you to Dover. You'll get a telegram. If you take that, behind that photograph of the aircraft, behind it, yes, is an album.
Yes.
You will see a photograph here of my brother's Vickers gun bus, they called them.
Yes.
And, well, cut the long story short. My brother was killed at Joyce Green. I had to go sick and have another operation, so I didn't get to the flying corps, really, until January 16. I made my first cross-country flight to get my wings in a Henry Farman. This is a bit unusual. It's another story. And I got my wings, and they kept me at the CFS as an instructor until in July. Everybody was crowding to get back to France, so I got a posting to 29 Squadron. I served there for 3 months, and then I got command of a flight in 40 Squadron, and then I carried out a plan I'd had for a long time, crossing the trenches at 200 feet and coming up to a balloon. I got my balloon, but they got me. I got a bullet in my pressure pipe, and I was a prisoner of war.
Now, you said that you spent those months with 29 Squadron on operations. What did those operations involve?
Defense flight of 2 aircraft. Norman Brearley is still alive in Perth in Australia. Colonel Lewis, a lot of very good friends. Then you could go on an offensive patrol. That would be 6 aircraft. And that meant crossing the lines and attacking German aircraft. But
were there German aircraft in the air or on the ground?
No, anywhere, yeah.
Did you have any successes against German aircraft?
There are a few reports here, yes. I shot 3 down, but my great operation was in from 40 Squadron, and I attacked a balloon having crossed the trenches at 200 feet, coming up to the balloon, put a drum in, a half a drum of incendiary, and the balloon didn't burn. The bottom part of the balloon didn't have any gas. So I had to change the drum, come back, and up went my balloon, but I got one bullet in my petrol pressure pipe, and I was a prisoner.
What was the caliber of the German pilots like that you fought against?
Bilke was, in our opinion, the best. He was very good, Bilke. Immelmann, yes. But, of course, Richthofen we regarded as a murderer.
Why?
If you read his book, you would see that he would, if he'd shot down a British or an Allied aircraft, he would follow him down and shoot him up on the ground. He claimed this in his bloody book. So he didn't think much of von Richthofen.
Did any of the other Germans do that?
No, Bilke was... I had his book here, unfortunately. I left it behind in Cairo, in German. He was all right.
Was there... What did you feel towards the German pilots? Did you hate them or respect them or what? In general?
They respected them. They were very good.
And what did you feel about your own aircraft, about the quality of your own aircraft?
The BBC people asked me about that, and they couldn't understand why I claimed that the pusher was better than the tractor. There's a model of my aircraft there.
Yes.
They made it. You can see that with a machine gun, with a machine gun in front of you, and we fixed the gun. We didn't traverse. We fixed the gun and we traversed with the aircraft. You had complete view in front of you, while with a tractor. You had the fuselage in front and the wings above, and you couldn't see anything like so well as with the pusher. But, of course, the pusher had an inferior performance in the end. The Sopwith Pup and so on, they came along, and they were faster, you see.
Can you describe what it was like being in a dogfight in the First World War?
Not really. You weren't conscious of the danger, you see. You hadn't any fear because you were in a fight, you see. The same thing with when I was in the infantry.
What were the kind of personal qualities needed to be a successful pilot? What kind of personal qualities did you need to have?
Well, I should think not being afraid to die. That's the outstanding thing. I've never been afraid to die. That's probably why I'm still alive at 92.
What about fitness?
Huh?
What about fitness? Or
sickness.
Fitness. Physical fitness. Did you need to be physically fit?
No. You had to keep your bowels moving. Nothing. I had a spot of trouble when I came out of... when I was still in the infantry and came home and was sent to Mrs. Barney Barnato's convalescent hospital in Hove. And now, my jaw was broken. I had bone pus coming out and so forth. I couldn't eat. And instead of giving me a mug with a possibility of just drinking something, they just left me alone. The following morning, there was an IMS a man there with pyorrhea, and he sort of took charge of me. He helped me to get dressed. I went down to breakfast, and I looked on as everybody else was eating their breakfast. I couldn't eat, and they didn't give me even a cup to drink from. Then I went and sat in a room while the others went out to walk. In comes matron and says, "What are you doing here? Get out on the front. You wanted the fresh air." So I had to go out, and a few minutes later they picked me up and carried me back again. So my IMS man took me to a medical board, and they said, "Well, what are you doing here? You go back to your convalescent home. Don't bother us here." My IMS man then took me to the railway station, put me in a train, and sent me to a hospital in a 10-bed, a lot of voluntary hospitals, 10-bed hospital. And the following day, a surgeon named Battle came along and looked at my dressing and so on and put me on the operating table and cleaned me up. As he said, another 3 days and you'd been a dead man. I refused, being public school course nonsense, to make any complaints, but two colonels from the War Office medical dukes came along, and they said, "You know, if you don't give us the details, somebody's going to lose their life down there. There were amputated cases, drinking champagne and so on." You see, Mrs. Barney Barnato was doing a wonderful thing, she thought. They closed the place down. By the way,
can you describe how you got shot down in more detail?
Yes. You see, this is a bit of a scandal. My elder brother had put Robert Lorraine, the actor airman, under open arrest for drinking with other ranks on the retreat from the Aisne in 1914. My name's unusual. I was posted to 40th Squadron when Robert Lorraine was commanding. I did a couple of months, I think I got two enemy aircraft, and was sent home on leave. On return, I was given command of sea flight, and I had to, no, on B flight, and I had to leave. In those days, we had our own aircraft, more or less. And my aircraft had a pistol handy on the right-hand side and some bars of chocolate, because I always had an idea that I could copy my brother, you see, who'd landed at Lille and walked out through Holland in 15. And I agreed with my successor in sea flight that I could take my own aircraft for a defensive patrol, the first job. Coming in to land from there, there was Robert Lorraine, who had no idea of discipline, cursing me for not flying the ropey aircraft, which was at the back of the hangar in my own flight. I had to take it, of course. Went down to mess to have breakfast. Coming back, I had to fly the ropey aircraft. And on an offensive patrol, six aircraft. I took off in this ropey aircraft, got up to 5,000 feet and couldn't go any higher. So I had to signal my signaling command to go on with the offensive patrol. I came down to 2,000 feet and found the engine running perfectly well. I thought, God, now I'm going to go back to the airfield and be cursed by Robert Lorraine in front of other ranks again. No. I'll carry out a plan I'd had in my head all along, which was to cross the trenches at 200 feet and come up to a balloon. And that was successful because they threw four anti-aircraft shells after me, but nothing else. You see, it was the first time it had been done. So I came up to my balloon and, in my ignorance, put half a drum of Buckingham incendiary into the at the bottom part of the balloon. Didn't go up. It was only air, no gas. So changed the... I got one bullet in my petrol pressure pipe. Prisoner of war.
Can you describe how you came down?
We were only at 400 feet. All I need to do is circle into the wind and land. We had no trouble landing without any power. Had I had my own aircraft, there were two albatross landed near me. Had I had my own aircraft with a pistol, I could have got out and ordered the observer out, got in, and made the pilot fly me. This is all this in a bloody good. I hadn't got a...
How did the Germans treat you on capture?
The other ranks got to me first, and they began to hit me about the head. But when an officer came, of course, they took me over. And
what did they hit you with?
Well, the fists. They were a bit angry, you see. They considered that I'd been shooting at them.
Were you interrogated? Were you interrogated? Interrogated? Asked questions? Did they ask
you? I was put in a cell at Douai and taken for exercise the following day, the following morning, for an hour's exercise, and I had decided not to discover the fact that I spoke German. But they were maltreating other ranks, and I, in a typical German way, ordered in German to send for an officer to stop maltreating the other ranks, and so I gave the show away. But when they came to interview me, the intelligence people, they got the story wrong. They knew that I was flying an FE, and they thought it was an FE-2B. And they started to cross-examine me what had happened to my observer. And I said, my name is Mapplebeck, my rank is captain, and that's all I need to tell you. But of course I had given away the fact I spoke German. They came the following day and said, we've been ordered by General von Schlitz, or whatever his name was, to express condolence on the fact that your elder brother has been killed flying in November 15. The name, you see, is not easily forgotten. So eventually there's a photograph here at the top one.
Yes, I can see it.
And that's the first prison camp I was in, Osnabrück. And you can see they got the names of the prisoners in that camp. Then we they separated the Russians and the French from us, and they sent the British to Clausthal in the Harz. And I had made up my mind that I would not attempt to escape myself, but I would organize escapes. So
why didn't you want to escape yourself?
Because I knew that I would be a marked man. You see, special marks, definitely. So we used to get our food parcels. I would get tinned pheasant from Fortnum's sent out. But I got an Army and Navy store catalogue. Have you ever seen one?
No.
About that thick, illustrations of everything, you know, and numbered.
Several inches thick.
Huh?
Several inches thick.
Yeah. So I got the catalogue sent out to me in Clausthal. I then ordered, according to page number so and so and so, for number so-and-so, six compasses, electric torches. My mother used to take German marks and put them into packets to come through to me, and civilian clothes, hats, and so on. So, speaking German, I volunteered to help the Germans distribute the parcels. And
it doesn't say much for their security.
No, it was very good, because the parcels would be numbered and a tick put against the name printed lists of the prisoners. And the following day, the prisoners would queue up and the parcels would be unpacked.